Hello and welcome to Friends in Your Ears, a podcast where podcaster Kathy Campbell interviews podcasters about their favorite podcasts on a podcast. I am joined today by two fantastic guests. I have Glenn Fleischman and Quinn Rose. Hi guys and welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
So Glenn, if you could be so kind as to introduce yourself and let everyone know where they can find you on the interwebs.
Sure. How much time you got? Just kidding.
You know, we got some time, but maybe keep it under 50.
50 seconds. So I'm a longtime journalist. Started out life as a typesetter and graphic designer. I still like to keep my hand in with that. I've been doing more of that kind of work lately, but I write for The Economist and The Atlantic and Increment Magazine and Fast Company and folks like that. And still write for Macworld, which our fearless leader Jason Snell used to head up. I've been running that for them for a long time. And more recently, I've been trying to be more of a maker and a creator and an artist, getting back to stuff I was doing 20 and 30 years ago. And I was the designer in residence at the School of Visual Concepts in Seattle last year and printed a book on letterpress. And just went to London a few months ago, saw a million people, saw a million things, and wrote a book about typography and printing history in London and published it and shipped out hundreds of copies. And like that. So kind of that's the two ranges of what I do. You can find me at glog, G-L-O-G dot glennf, G-L-E-N-N-F dot com.
Perfect. And what about you, Quinn? Where can we find you?
So you can find me online at aspiringrobot.com or on Twitter at aspiringrobotfm. I am a student, barely. I'm about to graduate from college with a degree in sociology and a minor in theater. I'm also a podcaster and a YouTuber, and you can find all of my work at the links I just read off.
Brilliant. Okay, so now that we have introduced ourselves to each other, how did you start listening to podcasts, Glenn?
I was trying to think about this. Ever since you posed that question, you gave us questions in advance. I'm revealing how the sausage is made. when thinking about that, I actually cannot think. I'm so old, I can't think of the first podcast I heard. Because I remember when podcasting became a thing, and partly because some of the people involved in making podcasting a thing that actually worked on the internet were problematic in various ways. So, you know, you sort of watch people and also kind of stand several feet away from them at the same time. So I can't remember the first podcast I listened to. I know that I started listening more regularly when there were tech podcasts that started up. And that was sort of my area of interest, was trying to follow things. So I know, you know, the Macworld podcast was actually pretty early. I hosted that recently for a couple of years, but I was actually the guest on Macworld podcast number one because Cyrus Farivar, who's now at Ars Technica, was an intern there, and he was like, podcasting, it's super cool, let's do a podcast. And he recorded one with me, and that was episode number one, like in, you know, somewhere 2005 range, 2006, something like that. So I don't know. I have this recollection that I started listening. I'm trying to think of the first podcast listening app I even had. Like, I can't even remember how we listened to them. It's so far ago. So, you know, I remember listening to 99% Invisible for a long time. We'll talk about favorites later, but This American Life in podcast format. But this is sort of a lame answer, but I'm not sure. I can only think of like this bulk of podcasts I started listening to when they started to become more popular, but I can't think of what my early ones were, because I just don't remember what was out there. Isn't that funny?
I definitely completely and totally understand, because thankfully I don't have to answer this question myself, because I too would be like, I vaguely remember, and like obviously I would know an answer to give. But it's interesting because when podcasts are so much in your life that you can't remember how it started, it says a lot about a person. And for the record, you had to download the file and upload it to iTunes in order to link it to an iPod.
Yeah, I have trouble remembering that because of course, I didn't have iPhones. You know, this is, you know, like, I guess 2004, 2005, people started to attach audio to RSS feeds. And mm-hmm. I had an RSS reader. So I was probably using NetNewsWire and listening to them on a computer.
Ooh.
Computer is my guess. But all I can think of is, I don't think I listened to some of the very early ones, like the Adam Curry one. I think I sampled at that, but there must have. It's funny. I'm trying to. I literally was looking. I was like, can you find a list of early podcasts? It's actually very hard. So yeah. My suspicion is it wasn't until they started to get made and it got a little easier to get them and people started using RSS more thoroughly that I started listening. I think of ones that are later, but not then.
Yeah, I think it became easier as well when you could go to a central location and find options to scroll through, because before they were just on websites. Like you would just go to the direct website to get it and get the file or whatever, or sign up for their RSS feed. And so the fact that as soon as Apple Podcasts became a thing, it also made it significantly easier to find podcasts. And yeah. Now that is also true, which is kind of nice.
It's funny how that history gets lost, because I don't think there's anywhere. I was looking around. I've still got some stuff, searches up my screen. I can't easily find a list. I'm sure there's somewhere. You go to Internet Archive of even what was available in 2006 or 2007 in those days. So I hadn't thought about that as like an issue. I mean, you know, a lot of the public radio stuff has made its transition later, but I think various of them were trying to figure out what to do early on and made them available in some form, or people would package them up. So, all right, I think I probably said I don't know for long enough, but it is interesting to me, because I remember a lot of other stuff. I remember sites I was reading, you know, I can remember early websites, early blogs, different kinds of new technology that developed. Some of the first, like I could say something like, the talk show, John Gruber's long-running show that was on the 5x5 network, and then Mule, and then went independent. I've been listening to that for a long time, intermittently. It's a long podcast, so I don't have enough time to listen to the full thing. But I've been listening to that for a long time. Or Accidental Ted podcast isn't that old, but I was listening to some of those guys before that, like Marco Arment and so forth. So I can think back to, 5x5 was one of the earliest networks, I think, especially the tech side. So I think that's probably the right answer. I was probably listening to early 5x5 podcasts. That was like when I think about the ones I was listening to regularly.
Well, the nice thing is this is not a trivia. This is not the game show. So whatever you say is the correct answer.
Phew.
You win. Hooray. Congratulations. All right, Quinn, what about you? What got you interested in listening to podcasts?
Just been listening quietly for the past several minutes. I have absolutely nothing to contribute to historical podcast listening.
That's okay.
I started listening to podcasts in 2014, and I've talked about this a little bit in other places, and I do kind of hate my podcasting origin story.
Oh, no.
Because, I mean, I listened to Welcome to Night Vale, and I have no memory of when I started listening to that. So I guess that was my first podcast, and I listened to it kind of on and off. But what really got me, like, into podcasts was I arrived at college, fall of 2014, and I met a guy, and the guy really liked podcasts, and he specifically really liked Hello Internet and ATP and The Incomparable. And I was like, all right, I really like you, so let's do this. but then I sort of subsumed everything that he loved and became way more obsessed with it than he was. So it just kind of took it over. But that really is how I started. And I started listening to those three shows a bit. And then from there spread out. And I think I found some shows just by Googling like podcasts to listen to, because once I got into those and I downloaded Overcast, which is so much better than the Apple podcasting app, I started, was like, oh, I really like these. And then eventually, amazingly, not immediately, because we were bad at things, I guess, but eventually figured out Relay FM existed as well, and then really liked all of those shows and just kept adding more and more to my collection. And now I have so many shows, I've literally given up on ever keeping up with them, but I also just keep adding more because it's so fun. There's so much stuff out there.
It's so true.
I did look this up because I was curious, and it looks like it was like 2005 that Apple added support for podcasts, which seems super early to me. And that explains more of why I can't remember this, because I think once they added that, then a lot of folks who were producing radio, it was very easy for them to release podcasts, because suddenly they didn't have to do the discoverable part and you could just punch it into iTunes and that was done. I also found this, I don't have to make this a history program, but I found the Pew Center for Internet Research. They did this survey in 2006 about podcasts, where it was like a couple years old, maybe. I mean, it wasn't that old. And it was something like 7% of all internet users early in the year had downloaded a podcast, like February to April 2006. By August 2006, it was 12% of people. Now the number is much larger. But you're like, oh my goodness. Like, I think of it as reaching any kind of critical mass only maybe in the last, I don't know, 5 to 7 years. But nope, it was 12 years ago. People had already, like, there was already a hockey stick there that long ago. That's fascinating. So, I mean, now again, it's much more widespread, but it was significant then. That means it was, you know, millions and millions of people. So anyhow, just a little historical note then, because I forgot everything.
So we have this history of podcasts that you've listened to. What made you actually want to start making them yourself? Now, Glenn, I know you were on the first episode of Macworld, but what about your own desires outside of, hey, come on, and this podcast thing is cool?
I got a good answer to this one. This question I can answer. So when I was a kid, many thousands of years ago, we had these things called tape recorders. And I'm sure you've seen one, Quinn.
What?
In a museum, or you own one. But so I had like a portable battery operated tape recorder. My parents must have given me, they had one and I used it. And I used to record myself. I was doing radio. I liked to listen to the radio when I was a kid. We have no radio connection in my house. We just, you know, we listened to a lot of music radio, but not not that much talk stuff. And I just like to talk into a tape recorder as if I were making a show. And I know, I think Jason Snell has a similar story. I don't think it's uncommon audio origin story for actors and for people who go on the radio. And so for a long time in my life, I thought it'd be fun to do something with radio. And that was when I was kind of a littler kid. And then we did not have, some high schools have radio programs or things like that. I didn't get involved. We didn't have one. I didn't reach out for that at that point. There were some opportunities. And even in college, I kind of poked around, but our radio station was kind of a mess and it was mostly music and whatever. So it was kind of always in the back of my head, wouldn't it be fun? And I love listening to public radio. I love listening to all these programs. And it wasn't until, I want to say about 2000, that a fellow who later became a friend of mine, John Moe, who's Minnesota, well, I don't know if it's all American Public Media, I think it's called now. It's used to be that kind of mix of NPR. He was a local guy and was one of the people who, one of the like host staff at KUOW, our local FM public radio station. And he's like, oh, I'm starting up this tech podcast. And he'd worked at Amazon. I was a smart guy. He's like, you should come on and talk about something. So I'd go down to the studio every few weeks. He'd have me on and I'd talk. And people would actually, oh, I heard you on the radio. Show was aired at night. That went on for a bit. Occasionally I'd get other programs. And then KUW asked me to be on weekly to talk about tech stuff for about, you know, 15 minutes. So I did that for like 3 years. And that was neat. That came a little bit later, like towards the end of the, I'm trying to think how long ago that was. That was towards the end of the 2000s. So somewhere in there, you know, I wound up being on some programs. I started my own podcast, but I just had, I don't know what it is. I feel like it's like the psychology. It's like the talking cure. Like I enjoy, especially, I don't want to just be talking at, I like to have these conversations, but I feel like there are things you can work out in a dialogue with someone or ways you can explain things to people by talking to somebody else about them or in a group. And so I feel like I don't want to be, I mean, I think that's the worst problem with American media right now is people come on with set ideas and they just talk at each other. And I love emerging ideas so that it's this emergent property of a discussion, you know, the dialectic, you come up with something from having talked about it and you all learn something and the people listening learn something. There is the tyranny of the audience, which maybe I'm not so into. That's something I really like at The Incomparable, as our listeners have become our friends and colleagues and acquaintances and like cohort. That's been neat because maybe have our voices on, but then listeners become people who are on podcasts and they start their own podcast and they become part of the network and it's cool. I'm getting off your question, but
I'm shocked, Glenn.
I know. But I never wanted to be one of those guys in a booth delivering news all the time. I thought it'd be fun to be talking with other people about stuff and other people would find it entertaining enough to listen. And thus it has happened.
Yeah, there is something, there's a lost art of conversation almost, especially in media today, where a lot of people will just like, I want to talk at you so I can get my words out. Whereas podcasts tend to be more of a conversation with each other, which is really interesting to see the dichotomy between the two types of media in the world. And it's very refreshing for sure, especially when you're trying to learn something new or get a new experience or hear different views about something, a specific topic. All right, Quinn. What made you want to start making a podcast?
You know, Glenn, I never connected this to anything to do with adult podcasting or radio or anything, but I also did that as a kid. Like, I had a tape recorder, and yeah, it was a tape recorder because I'm old school. And I would I recorded myself talking, and then I would also record songs from the radio. Like, I would just hit record, and then I would record the full song, and then I would talk more in the middle. And then I made my family listen to it at dinner a couple times, and they were like, please stop.
They don't understand your art.
So your podcasting started very early when you could really force it on people, on a captive audience.
That's how I did most things as a child. And then I took a big break, and then my radio career resurfaced. But I was thinking about this question, and a lot of people ask me this, especially because I am the only podcaster, like, you know, at school or in my friend group or whatever. And people are always very curious, but I don't have a satisfactory answer to why I started podcasting. I just, if I like something, if I like some kind of media, I just want to do it. Like, I write, I make videos, I make podcasts, and there's no reason why. It's just because I can.
Yeah.
And so I started a podcast with my friends, and I was really enjoying doing it, and I was learning things. And then I got invited to join Relay FM relatively early on in that. And so that was sort of the enabling factor. So I was like, okay, I don't totally suck at this. Clearly, somebody thinks I'm worth something. And now no one will ever convince me to stop because I've got that external validation and I'm on a roll.
Absolutely. You are on a roll. It's fantastic. Even though mixed feelings, for which I have mixed feelings about it being gone, is alas, rest in peace. You know, it was, I'm glad that it helped push you to get that reaffirmation of how awesome you are.
Thank you.
You know, I have a theory about this, actually, after hearing Quinn's answer, as well as I wonder, and not for everybody, obviously, and not for every show, but I wonder if it's this like excess of empathy problem some of us may have possibly. And it's like podcasting is a way to spread your empathy in a way that's socially acceptable.
It's also safer for you too, because you can have that safe space to have that empathy without getting overwhelmed by all of the emotions that happen to come in. Very and attack good. You.
Empathy yeah. broadcasts, but Ooh. It's true. Is I mean, I feel like this is one thing I've always loved about Twitter, and of course, it's horrible the last few years. But for the first number of years, is Twitter is like an empathy connecting machine, and I felt like podcasts were sort of part of that because you develop a connection, you know, as opposed to many radio programs or highly produced programs, because so many podcasts are just people like this talking, you feel you know people more. We were talking about that in one of the Slack teams recently about how it's easy to think you know somebody better because you listen to their podcast a lot, just like you think you know somebody if you're reading their Facebook timeline or something or Twitter. Right. You don't really necessarily, but I always consider myself somebody who's got a, you know, it's like, how much love do you have, right? And I have, I feel like a lot of love, and not always, let's say expressed the right way is the wrong thing to say, because that sounds like has lots of wrong connotations. More like I want to share my worldview that life is great and can be better with people without annoying them. And podcasts, because they're voluntary to listen to, is a great way to share a sense of love and joy in making and doing and being. So I wonder, Quinn, not to psychoanalyze you or myself necessarily, but I wonder, I know you're an empathetic person. You can't hide it. I'm sorry. There's no light under a bushel for people who have tons of empathy. So I wonder if that drives you too, if that's part of, I mean, certainly Mixed Feelings is a show like that, but just in general, this notion that it's a medium that lets us convey this sense of love and excitement. And even if it's not always love, it could be depression. It could be other kinds of things we're going through, but it allows us a way to broadcast emotion and share it and bring other people into it.
Well, now I'm going through an existential crisis, but
Uh-oh.
That's okay.
Sorry, I apologize.
Glenn, you broke her.
Oh, no.
No, I think that that's probably part of it is I've always sort of visualized my – I've always sort of understood my motivation of, like, I – like to be part of things that I love. And I think that that's just an extension of that idea. Mm.
Yeah. And I am also now thinking differently about so many things.
Well, it's funny, we're an electronic medium, and without, you know, going too far down this track, it's like I've made some great friends via Twitter, and I've made some great friends through podcasting with them. That's a little more personal, but I feel like there are these empathy connecting devices, and I think podcasting is one of them when you're on podcasts with people, or when you listen to them, or when they listen to you. You know, there's these events now. You go to these things like Relay Azalea FM have they don't have an event now, but like PodCon, and there's podcast events, and there's, you know, we all get together. How many different groupings of incomparable panelists have now gotten together where many of us didn't, you know, we're staying in each other's homes without ever having met each other before because we do podcasts together.
Yeah. So the internet's just amazing how it opens up this world for people that have mutual interests and lets them find each other. And podcasting for sure is something that's very intimate. And it allows you to have these friendships hanging out in your ears. Little bit of that there. But yeah, you get this sense of really knowing somebody, and then you can build the friendship from that, which this, our population now is just so amazing how we've really just grabbed onto this internet thing and made it just amazing. And yes, it can be a terrible dumpster fire, but it doesn't have to be. You can find the good and happy and everything in it all over the place. Oh, sorry, got a little excited there and couldn't breathe.
I'm with you. Right there with you. Pal, buddy, I'm right there with you.
All right. So off to the main question, the main event. Glenn, what is your favorite podcast and why?
That, again, these are very difficult questions. It's funny when you ask questions that seem on the surface, they should be very simple and easy. And then it's like, wait a minute, this is, I have a lot of favorite podcasts. And part of it, let me give my opening statement. No, I'm just kidding. Is that especially because I've been listening to podcasts for so long, like 12 years or more, I have this, I think people need to be given dispensation for two things. One is podcast bankruptcy. And the other is that sometimes a podcast you really love, you will stop loving. And podcast bankruptcy, I think there are people who are completists. There's something, one of my editors at The Economist, you know, I've had these conversations over the years about completism and finishability. And completism is like a notion you have to get to the end of something. So there are people who read Twitter. I don't know how they do it. They don't follow very many people. They can't follow me to do that. And then finishability is something where, like at The Economist, they actually designed the publication partly that someone could read it and be done. And it's, you're at the end of it. There is no more content. And they've designed some of their apps around that as well. I think those are interesting concepts. So so that is the podcast bankruptcy thing is like, I think it's okay to say like, I can't listen to 45 podcasts a week. I don't have a commute personally. So I actually have to make time to listen to podcasts. Yep. And I was looking at a job recently. I was like, oh, awesome. I could have like an hour and a half of podcast listening time a day. This is great. They're right? Like, well, there's also the commute. It's maybe not so great. So there's that. And then there's some podcasts that I loved and listened to for years. I mean, I'll take a great example. This American Life, I listened to on the radio and then in podcast form for many, many years. And at some point I was like, you know, I'm done. The show isn't worse. It's not like I'm uninterested in what they're doing, but I kind of filled up. Like I did all the This American Life thing I can. Maybe I'll come back to it. I don't think that's uncommon. So I've had different favorites of time and some come and go. So that's my opening statement, but you know, 99% Invisible is a consistent one, and they started producing more a few years ago, and so I don't actually listen to all the episodes. I've had a hard time keeping up, again, because of the podcast bankruptcy, but I just loved the show from the first time I heard it. And actually what's interesting is my friend John Moe was prototyping a show that did not ultimately get made, and Roman Mars, I wasn't on the show with him, but the host of 99% Invisible, he did a segment about a one-way trip to Mars. His name is Roman Mars, and he did a segment about how we could actually go to Mars if the trip was one way. It's much easier. And it was a really interesting and powerful segment. I was on a different segment. So anyway, I heard his work as a radio producer, and so when 99% Invisible came out, I'm like, oh my God, I want to hear, and this guy is, you know, this is Roman Mars, 99% Invisible. You want him to read the phone book to you. And, but fortunately he's also a great producer. So I've listened to that show, for years. It's, you know, it's a show about design and insides of things. And I think it's just fantastically interesting in its variety. So that's one for sure. Answer Me This will sound like an odd choice. It's been since like 2008 now or longer, and it's Ollie Mann, who's also a radio host in like has a full like part-time jobs at different times as a radio host on British radio and UK radio, and Helen Zaltzman, who is also a writer and has done other things and has done radio. And this is a, and they have other podcasts even now. This is a podcast where they started where they didn't have any particular expertise except the desire to produce it. And so they have defined a genre, which is people send in questions of all kinds about genitals and, history and the words for things. And they early on set up a Skype voicemail so people can, you know, hear their own voices when they ask the question. People will be drunk and call them and leave crazy messages. And they're just very charming and somewhat obscene and very good at their research. So they've been doing the show. They were doing it weekly for a while, and then now they're down to monthly. They have other ventures going on, but they have a deep archive. That's great. I just love the show. It has not gotten tired because of so much variety, just like 99% Invisible. So I'm a big fan there. I'm trying to think of other. The Flophouse I discovered through the Incomparable group, and I thought, well, this is probably not for me. You know, it's Daily Show writers and some other folks, and I haven't seen these movies, and I completely fell in love with it. I listened starting somewhere a few years in, and I'm told some of the earlier episodes, a little rougher, it's not as coherent, and maybe they're a little ruder about certain kinds of things. So going back to the beginning is not necessarily a good idea, but I've gone back quite a ways. I was sick as a dog a few years ago, and I listened to, I don't know, I think I was lying in bed and listened to like 40 hours of the archives or something. And that was great. And so it's a bad movie podcast. They watch a bad movie. They talk about it. And two of the people, one was the head writer of The Daily Show, Elliot Kalin. Dan McCoy is still writing for The Daily Show. And Stuart Wellington is a friend of theirs who's just a funny, interesting, hilarious guy who now runs a bar in Brooklyn. And they just have an incredible chemistry, the way they talk to each other. And they're just so quick on their feet and fun. It's not like stand-up comedy. They really love film. And they give it the proper respect, but I've heard them talk about a lot of films I've never seen.
I love the idea of the Flophouse and that you found it because not because you were interested in the topic, but the fact that you had recommendations for it, and then you stayed because of the people. Like exactly. A lot of times, I mean, staying because of the people and the voices tends to be common, but it's normally you find a podcast because you're interested in what they're talking about. And I love the fact that that was kind of opposite with the Flophouse for you.
It's true, as I only listen because people I knew liked it. So I thought, well, maybe I will like it also. And I do.
That's probably the most common way that podcasts get shared, honestly, is it's so, like, this is a whole thing, is discoverability of podcasts is just totally broken because it's so hard to share like this giant audio feature. And so it's mostly personal recommendations from either things like this, where it's like podcasters that you like recommending you shows, or people that you like and that you know recommending you a show.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think there's anything else that I would highlight. I'm just kind of, there's a, what's funny is then there's that line that blurs into things that are also aired on radio. So is that it is a podcast, but it's really something listed on radio. But the BBC Radio 4 comedy show, it's Friday Night Comedy. There's a segment called News Quiz. They do 6-week series, and then they alternate with other things. There's the Now Show, which is also contemporary. I don't like quite as much. There's some other programs. Sometimes I do, what is it called? The Museum of Impossibility. I forgot what it's called. It's a very interesting conceit. They invite three people on the show who are experts in different fields and often fantastically interesting. And they pretend as if they are running a kind of improbable museum that can accession any kind of item, like a blue whale or concepts or whatever. And it's a brilliantly funny and really deep show. But it's all on this Friday Night Comedy thing. And the News Quiz I like particularly, even though I'm not British and I have only been there a few times in my life, I really enjoy hearing it's sort of this incredible, the high-low thing where you have people talking both in an incredibly erudite fashion and also making potty humor, and they can go back and forth and it works. Where in America, it's either, you know, it's the one or the other, and or people are sort of pretentious. And here it's just an incredible mix. It's also why I like The Bugle, which is a podcast-only podcast. That's not on the radio. That's Helen Zaltzman's brother, or Helen Zaltzman's brother, Andy Zaltzman. John Oliver used to be the co-host of that show. And when he got the American program, he eventually had to leave because he just couldn't do it. But he and Andy Zaltzman are old friends. And Andy rebooted the show a couple years ago. And now he has rotating guests, and he's done a great job of getting people from all over the world, great comedians, and the same thing. They will be joking about like 16th century history and then making fart jokes, you know, and it's pretty terrific. And it does, it also tours. Maybe I've exhausted my list. There's one more I'm going to mention because it's actually new. A podcast called Comic Lab. That's a friend of mine, Dave Kellett, who's a cartoonist. He co-hosts it with his friend Brad Geiger, who's a long time. They've been tabling together for a long time at Comic Cons, and they're both very funny guys. But they're talking about the business of being a cartoonist. I am not a cartoonist. And I listened to the first episode, so I'm like, well, you know, Dave's a friend of mine. I should listen to it, and that'd be good because, you know, I want to be loyal and just see. Right. I'll listen to an episode. And I listened, and I'm like, oh, this is incredibly useful to me because even though a lot of the nitty-gritty, there's some, like, very detailed stuff that's about cartooning and about working cons, the broader focus, even when they don't intend to at all, is great insight for anyone making stuff they're trying to sell to people without intermediaries. And so as a writer who's now making books and some objects for sale and selling things directly over the internet, but occasionally in person, I've got some bookstore appearances booked for my Book London Kerning
local. Congratulations. Bookstore.
Thank you. They're going to do a couple appearances. We scheduled one and it filled up. So we're going to do another. They're going to sell books for me. So even as I'm doing that, they're talking about on this Comic Lab podcast about how, as a cartoonist, to book with bookstores and figure out how you sell them the books and discounts. I'm like, oh, this is directly relevant to my interest.
Oh, I can use this information. I can use this information. Yeah, that excitement of finding something. Gosh. And so did you start listening to it because you enjoyed you started listening to it because you enjoyed the people, right?
Yeah, it's, they're very funny. They laugh, like, I think 25% of the podcast is them laughing, which is fine. Which is
That's
good.
Awesome.
There's no remove laughter, which is good. There's no, like, you know, you can remove silences, but you can't remove laughter from a podcast app. But yeah. It is pretty funny. They set each other off because they know each other so well. They will just, you know, they've been sharing hotel rooms for years and all that kind of stuff. So they know.
Oh, but, how funny.
But it's just, it's not a super, like, let's do brass tacks of business, but they are both very serious about making livings as cartoonists. They've been doing it for a long time. They've learned a lot. They keep learning new things. And then they bring on, not every episode, but guests. Some of the guests are people, I know a lot of cartoonists, many of them in Portland, and they will bring on guests. I'm like, oh, it's my friend Lucy, here's my friend Danielle, and get to hear them talk about their careers in ways I haven't always, and then get to hear their sort of business maker creative advice. And boy, I never thought, and so I actually, I don't support that many Patreons, just because of money, but I became a $2 a month supporter of Comic Lab in order to get some more access to like a discourse, what is it called? Not discourse, what's the?
Discord.
Discord, yeah, the messaging thing. They have a messaging thing. Yeah. If you're a $2 or more a month supporter, and you get early podcast stuff, you get some other things. It's made me think about how, if I reboot a podcast I used to do, about how I might structure it using their structure. So I have learned so much from it, and this podcast is only a few months old. So it is one of my favorite podcasts because it's helping me in my new modality of career, and now that is the end of my favorite podcast. Thank you for letting me go on about this.
I love it so much. All right, Quinn, can you beat out Glenn's list?
Uh-oh.
All right. I was told I could have many choices, and so I organized mine into categories so I can go through them pretty quickly. First of all, what I'm referring to as my classic faves, this is Hello Internet and Cortext. Hello Internet, which I mentioned earlier, and Cortext, which is hosted by Mike Hurley and CGB Gray. And I'm not going to dive too far into both of these shows because people talk about them. People in this community know about them. They're wonderful. They are really what got me into podcasting and, like, specifically this podcasting community. And so they have a very special place in my heart. And they also still always go to the top of my queue when they come out. So right up there. Next category is stories that I love. The first one being The Adventure Zone, which I got into after everyone else. I only started listening to it in December, but it's the McElroy brothers and their dad playing tabletop games and doing narrative storytelling. And I listened to the entire first arc in the month of September, which was 69 episodes of podcasts over an hour each. And it was awesome. It was so great, and I love it. They're just starting season 2 right now, and I'm really excited to dive into it. There's also Welcome to Night Vale, which I also mentioned earlier, is technically the first podcast I ever started listening to it's a semi-absurdist, very weird show that has such a strong heart. I've been listening to it for many years, and I have an undying love for the characters. I also very briefly met Jeffrey Craner, who is one of the creators of the show, and Cecil Baldwin, who is the host, at a convention several years ago, and they were very nice to me, and now I am loyal to them forever. And then there's 36 Questions, which was, it was only three episodes. It was a contained story, but it was a podcast musical, and Jonathan Groff starred in it, who is amazing. I don't think it was a perfect show, but I do think that it was such a great beginning to this podcast musical genre, and that they did an incredible job with it. Highly recommend just listening to all three episodes and really exploring this story. And I can't wait for what that team does next and what other kinds of musicals come out in podcasting. Next two I have are Bad With Money, hosted by Gabby Dunn, and Call Your Girlfriend, which is hosted by Anne Friedman and Aminatou Sow. Bad With Money is... So Gabby Dunn, I've been a fan of for a while, which is how I found Bad With Money, and it is all about being bad with money and power structures and how capitalism works. And she talks to all sorts of professionals and experts in terms of some practical money advice, but also mostly about the world around us and having a more deep understanding of what money means in the world. Spoiler alert, basically everything, which means the show is incredibly wide-ranging. Call Your Girlfriend is one of the first shows that I actually started listening to. It's the one that I found by Googling, what podcast should I listen to, after I started getting into them. It's a fun look at current events and pop culture with a focus on feminist topics. And both of the hosts are very talented and often pull in super cool guests, everyone from Cecile Richards to Hillary Clinton. And they've done some really amazing interviews over the years. So all sorts of stuff that I love there. In the category of shows that I just find really fun, there's Dear Hank and John, which are the two brothers of the Vlogbrothers and VidCon fame, and one of them is John Green of John Green Novels fame, and they answer advice questions from their listeners. And the format of brothers answering advice questions from their listeners may sound familiar, and indeed about three episodes into Dear Hank and John, they announced that this podcast already existed, and it's called My Brother and Me, which is the McElroy brothers, three brothers, they got an extra one, answering advice questions from their listeners. So I love both of these shows. They, even though they sound, they have similar concepts on paper, they're actually very different. Dear Hank and John is much more focused on actual advice, and they sort of have a joke culture that built up along the way, and every episode they give you the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, because those are their personal interests. Now, the My Brother and Me with Griffin, Travis, and Justin McElroy is just all comedy, and the advice that exists is mostly incidental. Like, they're good people, and sometimes they accidentally give you good advice, but they're just trying to do jokes.
Very different purposes for their podcasts.
Yeah, I wouldn't take any advice that My Brother and Me gives you, but I would take advice that Dear Hank and John gives you. Let's just say that. And finally, in the fun category, I am biased on this one because I personally know these people, but Most Important Meal. It's a podcast about very important breakfast journalism, and it really is just about breakfast, and it's so fun and delightful, and it's hosted by Brian Hamilton and Allison Truge, who have great chemistry because they are a real-life couple. And they often bring in different guests to talk about their breakfast opinions. And people get so heated about opinions about food, which makes it so fun to listen to.
Yes, I agree on Most Important Meal. And it makes me very happy. Listen to the most recent episode. And I think there's a link to a fan art that I did for them. Because I am just that much of a nerd.
I have a terrible confession to make. This is terrible. I've heard about the show quite a bit, and I love Brian Hamilton. Love him dearly.
He's Allison, the best.
I don't know Truge as well. I like her very much, but I wouldn't say I love her because I don't know her well enough to make that presumption about her. Brian, I love very much. I haven't listened to the show. I don't know why. I just haven't put it in my feed. So it's going to my feed right now.
Yes,
why?
Do it. Edit. Do it, Glenn.
It's just what I see it get talked about. And I'm like, oh, that sounds great. And then I don't do anything about it. So
we're going to pause the podcast recording right now.
Most Important Meal. You could do one about snakes and call it Most Important Mealworm, but probably
No. You can listen to one of their recent episodes with James Thompson on it, who was also on this show.
Maybe if I listen, I could be on it. That's my secret, is how I get on shows.
yes, okay, that's the best secret. But yes, continue on. Sorry.
Yes, and I'm running through these so fast because I feel like I have too many, but I love so many podcasts.
No such thing. Never. There's no such thing.
But okay, my last category, which is I'm calling different and brilliant with my last three selections. One is I only listen to The Mountain Goats, which is it's a Night Vale Presents show, but and as opposed to their narrative fiction that they were mostly doing before, this is a new entry, and it's one of those media breakdown shows, sort of like those there's lots of television shows in The Incomparable that go like one episode of a TV show at a time. Well, this is going one song at a time from the band The Mountain Goats. But what makes it really interesting is it's hosted by a fan of The Mountain Goats, Joseph Fink, and John Darnielle, who is The Mountain Goats. And so they are taking the first season is all about the album All Hail West Texas, and they're taking it one track at a time. And they're talking about the song and its creation and its writing and its place in the Mountain Goats and its place in culture. And each episode also features a cover by a different band of that song. And I believe all of the covers are going to be gathered into records at the end that you can buy on vinyl. So it's this whole cool podcast experience that I know very little about the Mountain Goats. I know two of their songs. I like them, but they're not my favorite band in the world. But this is so... But you don't have to be a fan of the Mountain Goats to like this podcast, because it's really about art and the relationship between artists and fans and what that means, less about specifically, oh, what is this band all about?
That reminds me of the Mountain Go, not Mountain Goats, the West Wing, I'm saying Mountain Goats, you just said Mountain Goats, of West Wing Weekly, which I never watched the show.
Glenn!
Didn't float my boat. Exactly. But Glenning, Joshua Molina, is the brother of a friend of mine. But that show has Joshua Molina on it. And I think they get other West Wing people on from time to time, right? And they do specials. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I met him even. Rishi Hirway. Okay, so now I know how to pronounce his first name. And I met him at XOXO. Super nice guy and great host. And does
he was at XOXO. Oh, man.
A few years. Yeah, year three. Song Exploder, which is like another thing that's in my queue. I never get a chance to sit down and like have focus time to listen to. But anyway, I love this idea that you have the creator of a thing is willing to explicate it. I mean, Song Exploder is all about that with different people every week, but West Wing Weekly and this Mountain Goats podcast, that's it's really risky for a creator to do that. And it's really cool when they're willing to engage their own material or material they're involved with. I love it a lot.
My last two picks, I promise I'm going to get through them. One of them is The Anthropocene Reviewed, which is a new podcast from John Green. I have listened to one episode of this podcast. I think there are three or four out right now. And what it is he takes two items of the Anthropocene, which is just the human world, and reviews them on a scale of 1 to 5, I think. It's a pretty silly concept, but the show, I picked it up on a whim because, you know, I like John Green. I listened to his other podcast. And so I was like, okay, this new episode pops up in my Twitter feed. I'll download it. Casually listening. 20 minutes later, I am sobbing.
Oh wow.
This is episode 3 of The Anthropocene Reviewed. It was one of the saddest and most beautiful pieces of writing I have heard in my entire life. No exaggeration. I have not listened to the rest of the show yet. I believe that was he promised that the rest of them are not that sad, but I couldn't not include it on this list because it made such an impact on me.
Wow.
But to end on a happy note, finally, and again, slight personal bias, but Originality, which is on Relay FM, hosted by Aline Sims and Kate Deppis Bradford. This show is just wonderful. I wish I had made it. Each episode, they talk about the origins of creative genius and different aspects of that, like writer's block and how to write from different perspectives. And then they have guests come in from different industries like writing and theater and all of these things to share their stories and their advice. And I knew I was going to like it because I know Aline and I like Aline. But as soon as I started listening, I was like, This is so much better than I even dreamed. I wait eagerly for every episode.
It's pretty, pretty fantastic. And I'm not saying that just because I have an episode that I did.
Yes, you're on. It really is amazing.
It is really amazing. I love it.
I got to say, I left out like a bunch of podcasts made by people I know I left out because there's so many of them. So I don't know. I was going to add one, which is the Game Show Podcast, part of the Incomparable Network. I've been on a number of them, but I love listening to it. It's one of the most fun things I think we do, but it's also super fun to listen to.
Yeah. And your kids love it too, which is great. Love it. Go to bed, Glenn's kids.
I'll play that for them. Rex All right, is perfect. Rex is an addict to the show.
Yay. Awesome. All right. So now we're done with podcasts on this podcast. And we have the very important bonus question. Are you guys ready?
Yeah. Maybe.
There is no wrong answer.
I'm always ready.
All right. So what is the strongest animal you could win against with just your bare hands and feet?
So there's no size limit. It's really just strongest animal.
Strongest animal.
So we talked, is this like each of us or like a collaboration? Do we have to?
Each of you, because you'll probably have different answers.
Okay, well, like, so a bear is right out. Like, that's with my bare hands. You're talking about, yes. Like, so I would go mano a mano with some kind of creature.
Right.
Okay, well, raccoon, but is it like physical strength? Like, I could wrestle them to the ground, but they could slash at me? I want to know the parameters here.
The parameters are whatever you wish them to be.
Interesting. I mean, there's a lot of animals that could just, like, you know, a wasp could sting me and I could die or something. That's pretty
but
small.
But that's, like, so not necessarily, like, they're animal? Poison or anything.
Okay,
but mono, like, mono. Hand-to-hand combat.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if I think a wolf is probably too powerful. They've got the jaws. They've also got really powerful bodies. So I'm not sure I could beat a wolf. Maybe. Maybe. I think that would be I think I could maybe fight a wolf to a standstill. Maybe. But I'd be pretty injured. I don't know. Wolves are probably beyond me. Raccoons, they're feisty, but I think it would really be like they'd, you know, slash me to pieces. But I think I could probably like hold it down and keep its arms away. So that's, but bigger than a raccoon, smaller than a wolf. Or less, you know. That's a good question. I'm trying to think what's in the intermediate stage there. You know, I think about there are monkeys, but monkeys have such powerful arms. I think they would just like slam me to the ground and beat me senseless because they've got such upper body strength. I mean, they have prehensile things, so they could really hurt.
Yeah, they have that extra tail, which makes it difficult.
I mean, even a tiny monkey could probably really do some damage. God, what's the biggest? Well, I'd say, I mean, definitely bigger than a raccoon. Badgers, I don't know if I want to go up against a badger.
Ooh, no, badgers. I wouldn't want to go up against them with an actual weapon either.
Yeah, you could win against a badger, but would you really win? So, but I don't know. I don't know if that's probably like in terms of size of things. You know, it's funny trying to think about animals that are like within human scale, like what's bigger or smaller on four legs. Maybe a sun bear. I bet I could take a sun bear. Because those are relatively small. I don't think they're super powerful. They're powerful, but they're not bears. They're a different species. I would also like to wrestle a, what is the creature? It's, I have to think about it. It's my favorite animal in the zoo, but I just want to cuddle with it. It's, why can't I think of the name of it? I'll come back to that one.
Can you describe it?
It's big and also often has two colors. Why can't I think of this animal? Oh, I've completely. It's my favorite animal, and we've talked so much, I have lost my entire mind. I can picture the thing, and I can't even describe it. Not a wombat. It's like a wombat. It's from. It's
like a koala or a panda.
It's bigger than a wombat. It's bigger than a koala. It's a. This is hilarious. I've clearly talked too much because I cannot. Remember.
Okay, is it what family of species? So it's furry.
It's furry. It's for goodness sake, what is it called?
What bicolors are it?
Typically sort of black and white, but it's got like spots on it. Oh my God. I've completely lost my mind. Obviously, answering that last question completely broke my ability to remember my favorite animal.
So this is the definition of glutting. That's the opposite one of lizzing, where you talk yourself out of the correct answer.
I talked myself out. I'm actually literally looking at the Woodland Park Zoo to remember what animal it is. And it's just terrible. Oh my gosh. I'm so silly.
I'm so keeping this in.
This entire time, I've just been thinking, like, I don't know, maybe an ant?
I know you could take an ant.
No, but seriously, I think I'm going to pick a deer because I feel like of all of the bigger animals, they're relatively weak. And that, I mean, they could definitely destroy me if they could kick me. But if I get right in there and just tackle it, I feel like I got to keep it down.
Keep nice. Thinking about the kicking. The kicking is really...
yeah, you got to get them close.
A taper. That's what I want to say.
Oh, taper.
I don't know why I can remember it. They're really adorable.
They are really cute.
It's from tropical Asia, though, not from Australia. My mistake.
No, it's not.
I'm sorry, Quinn. I interrupted your ant discussion. You know, an ant can't lift
a deer. No, a deer. Plant,
but it's got deer. High hopes. Oh, sorry.
She's picking a deer.
Oh, a deer.
Now, are you
is...
doing a doe or a or any? Ray because the stag would probably, so... like...
Yeah, no, I mean like a little one.
A fawn. Really,
I feel like, well, not... I can,
are you going to tackle
I mean,
Bambi?
Gonna,
is
I'm
that what you're saying?
I'm not going to fight a baby animal. Like a full-grown deer, but the smallest option.
You're gonna take out Bambi. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, if it's a fight to the death, sure. I'm not gonna let Bambi like beam me in the face.
I don't know though. Well,
cute,
maybe
but you're gonna win.
Like, isn't that a moral argument though? What if Bambi's led a better life than you? Should you sacrifice your own in a
I'm gonna be real
battle?
With you. I doubt that. I'm a vegetarian, okay? I feel like I have the moral grounding to be like, I would take down Bambi in a cage match.
I love that so much, especially because like there was no talk about killing because I wanted to make sure the question was appropriate for Quinn. And the fact that she chose Bambi just makes me so happy.
I feel like I've been led into this Bambi conversation. Grown
deer. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a few years on you. I know how to take you down. That's the animal that can take you down, Quinn. It's me. I can take you down by bringing up Bambi.
Okay, fine. A roan deer. That's acceptable.
I was just thinking about being confronted by every animal I've ever eaten. Now, that is a moral dilemma.
I would lose that so
Why,
badly.
Homer? Why?
Delicious, delicious meat. But that is neither here nor there. Thank you so much to both of you for joining me on this episode of Friends in Your Ears. I hope you had as much fun as I did. You can find us online. We're at friendsinyourears.com or on Twitter at friendsinyears. You can find Glenn at Glenn F. And you can find Quinn at AspiringRobotFM. And I am at Mrs. Soup, all on Twitter. Thank you again. And feel free to... leave us a rating on iTunes. We love to hear what you have to say about us or contact us through any of the previous links. And I hope you all have an absolutely fantastic day. Bye.